Support for the New Hampshire News Recap comes from you, our listeners, and from the University of New Hampshire, where the Center of Excellence for Operational Ocean and Great Lakes Mapping, dedicated to advancing ocean exploration and promoting public and private partnerships, is now under construction. Learn more at unh.edu.
This is Morning Edition on NHPR. I'm Rick Ganley, and this is the New Hampshire News Recap. The Senate voted down a War Powers resolution this week that would have blocked the U.S. military from continuing attacks in Iran without congressional approval. New Hampshire Senator Jean Shaheen voted in favor of that resolution. Shaheen is the ranking member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee and a senior member of the Armed Services Committee. I spoke with her about the escalating war in Iran and safety concerns for Americans in the region. First, why did you vote against further U.S. military action in Iran?
Well, what I voted was to try and have Congress, to restore the authority of Congress over declaring war or not. And I think there is real concern in Congress on both sides of the aisle, although the vote was pretty one-sided, but there is real concern about having the sole authority to go to war vested in the President of the United States. There was a reason why the Constitution and our Founding Fathers gave the ability to declare war to the Congress, because they wanted to make sure that it wasn't just one person who was making that decision, that if we were going to go to war, that there was support from the people of the country. And I think we need to restore Congress's role in declaring war.
You've been in briefings on this conflict, and it's rapidly escalating. What's your view on how it's going?
I am not mourning for the Ayatollah. He was a repressive, autocratic, authoritarian dictator who denied his own people their human rights, who murdered thousands of Iranians just a couple of months ago. He promoted terrorism across the Middle East, from Hezbollah in Lebanon to the Houthis in Yemen to Hamas in Gaza, has been responsible for a lot of American deaths. And I would also say that I think the military has executed their mission in a way that deserves our admiration. But I'm concerned about the loss of life. We've already lost six members of our military. I'm concerned about the escalation that's going on. I'm concerned that there was no plan for how to address our embassies in the region and how to address the thousands of Americans. The estimate is about a million Americans are in those 14 countries that the administration has urged people to evacuate from, and there's no plan for how to help them get out. We've been working with constituents from New Hampshire who've called our office to try and see how we can help them. I think they're finally beginning to get some evacuation flights that are being sponsored by the government and the State Department, but that should have been part of the planning. I'm also concerned about how much this escalates. We've already seen attacks against Turkey, against Azerbaijan. So there are an expansion of operations in ways that I think we have not adequately planned for. And then, of course, the cost of the war is going to be huge at a time when people are still dealing with an affordability crisis. We're seeing gas prices go up dramatically. We'll see energy prices go up, and people are struggling still to afford groceries, housing, childcare, all of the things that people need to be comfortable living and supporting their families. So I think there are a lot of ramifications for this action that people in America are going to be feeling.
Well, do you feel there's a clear strategy here, Senator?
No, and the president has changed the strategy almost daily or whenever he's spoken to the press. There is not a real end game for what we're trying to accomplish. He said it was regime change. We know we want to prevent Iran from getting a nuclear weapon. Of course, when we did the bombing of the nuclear sites last June, the president said they were obliterated, but clearly we have not been able to obliterate the knowledge of how to enrich uranium and produce a nuclear weapon. And that's why the diplomatic negotiations would be so important, because I think that's the way we ultimately prevent Iran from getting a nuclear weapon.
As you mentioned, many Americans stranded right now in the Middle East, struggling to get flights back home, find a way out, major airports in the region being targeted with Iranian strikes and shutdowns. How are you helping Granite Staters evacuate?
We're trying to make sure that anyone who calls our office or that we hear about who is stranded has as much information as possible about what's available to them. As I said, the State Department has been slow in getting planes in to evacuate Americans. That's beginning to happen now. So we're trying to make sure that people have access to that information when flights are going to be coming out, and that they know everything that we know about the situation. One of the challenges, Rick, is that of the 14 countries that the administration has urged Americans to evacuate, only six of them have confirmed ambassadors right now. So in terms of having people on the ground there, the ambassadors who normally take charge in those kinds of situations are not there. And in fact, in two of the countries, they're political. They're not in Lebanon and Israel. We have ambassadors, but they don't have diplomatic experience and have not dealt with this kind of a crisis before. So that has also exacerbated the challenges for Americans in the region.
Senator Shaheen is the ranking member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee and a senior member of the Armed Services Committee. Thank you so much for the time, Senator.
Good to talk to you.
You can find the full interview with Senator Shaheen right now at our website at nhpr.org. Yesterday, the New Hampshire House pushed off a vote on a measure that would open an investigation into Supreme Court Chief Justice Gordon McDonald. The decision to table the resolution follows months of headlines involving the justices and their actions off the bench. NHPR's Todd Bookman has been following this, and he joins us now. Good morning, Todd.
Good morning, Rick.
Todd, remind us why some lawmakers wanted to investigate Supreme Court justices in the first place.
Yeah, the focus on Gordon McDonald really sort of revolves around three main areas of concern that I've heard from lawmakers. So one thing that backers of an investigation are interested in is this $50,000 payout that was made to a top court employee. So there's a whistleblower that alleges Chief Justice McDonald helped orchestrate this payment to Diane Martin. Martin last year was laid off and then rehired just 48 hours later. That brief gap in employment allowed her to collect, again, about $50,000 in benefits. The Attorney General's office did investigate this. They found that no criminal laws were broken, but there is still an appetite among some lawmakers to review this payout further. A second topic I've heard is whether or not McDonald was truthful with prosecutors when he was interviewed as part of an investigation into his former colleague, former Supreme Court Justice Anna Barbara Hance Marconi. And then a third topic that's come up during hearings is some lawmakers believe that McDonald may have received preferential treatment in his own personal divorce case.
Now, isn't there some kind of system already for investigating judges besides legislators getting involved?
Right. So, if someone, a judge, is accused of violating a criminal law, there's the Attorney General's office. Internally, there is the Judicial Conduct Committee. So this is an independent group that can launch, investigations into judges if they're accused of violating the state's code of conduct for judges. So again, this isn't about decision making. This is about conduct, generally speaking, off the bench. We know that Hance Marconi has an open case before the JCC that's linked to her criminal conviction last year for trying to influence the governor. The JCC has confirmed that publicly, but there's been nothing said publicly, at least yet, about Gordon McDonald.
Okay, so those in favor of the investigation want some transparency here. What are opponents of the investigation saying?
Yeah, I've heard two things. One is that, some lawmakers just say there's really no there to any of this, that there's no smoking gun, that McDonald has violated the code of conduct or any other policies that warrant this level of scrutiny on him. And I've also heard other lawmakers say they're just frankly concerned about the precedent that this could set. The House would be taking a pretty rare step here to launch an investigation into a sitting judge. And for some lawmakers, that's just kind of crossing a line in regards to the Constitution, separation of powers.
Gotcha. Another issue that came up for a vote yesterday, a bill that would end the use of school-issued IDs in elections. What's the current law surrounding school IDs, and how might that change?
Sure. So if you're a registered voter on election day, you go into the polls to get a ballot. Under New Hampshire law right now, you need to show a photo ID, you know, right there at the check-in table. Driver's licenses are accepted, including out-of-state licenses. People can show passports. They can show military IDs. And school IDs with a photo issued by New Hampshire colleges, universities, those have also historically been accepted. But the House earlier and then this week the Senate both voted to scrap that, the ending of the use of college and university IDs as well as high school IDs. And so this is now heading to the governor's desk.
What were lawmakers' issues, Todd, with how these IDs are used to get a ballot? I mean, is there any indication that they've ever been used for fraud?
No, there's no indication. We have never seen or heard, as far as I'm aware, of the Attorney General opening an investigation or filing charges for somebody for using a fraudulent college ID to cast a ballot. This measure, though, you know, it's backed by Republicans. They have made the case that school IDs just simply aren't as secure as government-issued IDs. Some schools issue IDs that don't have expiration dates, for example. And then there's an argument that, you know, this essentially gives college students a special option for voting that other, you know, residents in New Hampshire don't get. Again, the flip side to this, though, is that, you know, voter fraud is exceedingly rare. We know that in New Hampshire. And again, no claims that college IDs are at the root of any fraud.
Okay. So you said the desk is heading, the bill is heading for the governor's desk. Do you have any indication on what direction the governor may be going on this?
To my understanding, Governor Ayotte has not commented publicly on this, but, you know, this bill is certainly in line with, you know, the GOP's movement on election issues in recent years. So it's certainly plausible she will sign this if she does. It's also possible, as we've seen in recent years, that really every major change to New Hampshire election law seems to get a legal challenge. I haven't seen any groups publicly say they're going to challenge this one, but it's certainly possible.
Yeah, that was my next question. So, Todd, what else are you working on that we should be keeping an eye out for?
You know, it was sort of an interesting week in New Hampshire. You know, late yesterday, Governor Ayotte confirmed that members of the 157th Air Refueling Wing, you know, this is the Air National Guard based out of Pease, are taking part in the war in Iran. They've been activated by the federal government. We still don't know anything about their role yet, and that is by design. You know, releasing too much information puts potentially those airmen at risk, but, you know, it raises questions about what they may be doing in support of the war in Iran. We've also got the state Senate back in session next week. This week, hundreds of millions of dollars in contracts for rural health initiatives, part of a federal program to sort of bolster, you know, rural health care, with a lot of the focus on the North Country in New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. You know, those contracts were stalled. That's something that we're going to be watching in the weeks ahead. So,
and we'll be talking about all of it, I'm sure. NHPR senior reporter Todd Bookman. Todd, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you, Rick.
Find more of Todd's reporting, by the way, at nhpr.org. I'm Rick Ganley, along with producer Jackie Harris, and this is NHPR.